Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the boxing news podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by John Denham. Also delighted to say that Nick Bond is here as well, who has come along and is, I think we're being beamed out to all of, about what, 30?
20
viewers on Periscope, which is a new social media platform that we're experimenting with. But there was some really interesting action last week that we'll start talking about. Gennady Golovkin, probably most fans' top middleweight, although we do put Miguel Cotto at that spot in our rankings as a consequence of his win over Sergio Martinez. John, what did you make of the fight? I think we thought that, I think when we spoke last week, we didn't give Willie Monroe any real chance at all. And when I was watching it, I thought he did pretty well for as long while he was still in there.
Yeah, he did. I just thought in the second round, he took such a pasting that I thought, even though I wasn't watching it live, I was watching the replay, and I didn't think he was going to make it out of the second round, even though I knew the result. And then he actually started connecting with Golovkin a bit in the third and fourth, and actually for a brief while.
I think he surprised a lot of people. People do wonder whether Golovkin sort of took him lightly, but he certainly is good. Yeah. Perhaps not top 10 middleweight, but he is good, isn't he?
But maybe Golovkin just Golovkin by the second round realised that he could hurt him and Monroe and couldn't be hurt by Monroe and just walked through him.
It was also a good choice of opponent for Golovkin because he represented something that he hadn't seen for a while, if at all, as a pro, you know, that slick southpaw, quite busy, and he turned out to be quite tough, so he got a few rounds.
That's what he said beforehand. He said the reason that they picked Monroe is that he wanted to test himself. He kind of wanted to see, he's in the previous, some fights in the past had problems with southpaws. He wanted to see if he would. But he also said afterwards, or he kind of indicated that he let the fight continue a little bit longer. He made it a little bit more difficult than he needed to. Do you take that with a pinch of salt, or do you think there's some truth in it?
I think a bit of both, really. I think there probably is some truth in it, but it's probably not the best thing to say, is it? But Golovkin is a breath of fresh air because he's somebody who stays busy, and in his own words, he brings a big drama show, doesn't he? And it's just good. It's just all good for boxing.
Well, it's good in the way that he can fight these sort of lesser, lower tier guys, but still make it exciting in the way he attacks them. But he does need a big name.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people criticise him for who he hasn't boxed, which perhaps isn't fair because we can only judge him on who he has boxed, and he's looked sensational doing it.
It's not like he hasn't wanted to fight the bigger names either. One of the first things he did after the fight was call out three big names, wasn't it? Yeah. He called out Cotto, Canelo, and Andre Ward.
Yeah, which is probably the three toughest fights for him, you know, outside of Mayweather, who's obviously a lot smaller. Yeah, there's no question that he wants to fight the best.
Miguel Cotto's in no great rush to fight him.
Well, not many people are by the looks of it.
You didn't call out Karl Froch, though.
No, but they're talking about that, aren't they?
They are talking about that, and because we have something every week in the magazine where we put something out there to social media, to Facebook, to Twitter, and what have you. And the question this week was, who can beat Gennady Golovkin? Now, I went through we had over a thousand replies, and I was surprised by how many were saying Karl Froch. In fact, I think if you were to take it and you were to add up all the different answers, that Karl Froch would have been the most popular. It seems strange in that Golovkin, perhaps by his standards, may have had an off night, perhaps, arguably, but a little while ago.
If that's an off night.
Well, exactly. but how do you guys think Froch would get on with Golovkin?
Froch, for sure, would be the toughest, meanest, strongest guy he's boxed. But that's not necessarily a good thing, because if Golovkin can hit you, then you're in for a long night.
So I would have thought Karl Froch, he's sort of done it all now. He hasn't retired yet, but we don't know if he's coming back. So he's obviously done, you know, he's very comfortable in his life and what he's achieved. do you really need Golovkin at this point in your life?
If that fight were to happen, the credit would have to go to Froch for making that happen, because Golovkin would fight anyone, anywhere. But Froch has had a lot of hard fights. He's had the big fights. He's done all he probably wants to achieve in boxing. Why does he need to fight Golovkin?
Yeah, Golovkin needs him because he's the sort of big name.
Because it'd be a really good fight.
It would be fantastic.
It'd be an absolute war. But then no.
Who wouldn't want to see that?
Yeah, Golovkin Alvarez would be a total war as well.
More and more, that's the fight that's looking like the one to make and to see. Canelo looked brilliant, didn't he?
But I don't think Oscar De La Hoya's in it. He wants it to
build up.
But then, like, it'll be big now, but it would be huge, like, next year or in 2 years.
Yeah, I think Canelo wants to go the Cotto route first.
Yeah.
Unless I'm wrong, but perhaps they think they can beat Cotto.
Also, I'm sure they do. And if one of them does beat Cotto, that would sort of, they'd be sort of, because Cotto's sort of the third biggest name in the sport.
Yeah.
And that would sort of push them towards taking his place.
Yeah, and he's the guy that is at the tail end of his career, you know. To beat him would be huge kudos to the guy who did it. They would be the one who said, you know, I retired Miguel Cotto or whatever.
Yeah, it'd be like Cotto's seventh loss, wouldn't it?
Really?
Would it? Fifth? Sixth?
It wouldn't be seventh, no. Cotto, you know, he's still a significant player in the division.
He is. Would you give Cotto any chance in that fight against Golovkin?
You'd have to, because Cotto would be head and shoulders the best fighter that Golovkin's boxed as a pro, without a doubt. He would represent something that Golovkin hasn't faced yet. And it would answer a lot of questions about Golovkin. I think Golovkin would probably be a favourite. But wouldn't write him off by any stretch of the imagination. John?
I don't know, it's just when you're coming to the end of your end of your time, it's sort of...
It's a similar situation with Froch, though, isn't it? You know, he's coming to the end of his career, if not at the end of his career. What's he got left? What's Cotto got left against a younger, mean destroyer like Golovkin?
Yeah. Do you think Cotto could lose to Daniel Gill?
He could, yeah, but I don't think he will. I think Gill isn't the type of boxer to beat Cotto. I see a similar fight to Golovkin-Gill, but perhaps 5 or 6 rounds. I see Cotto stopping him. Possibly body shots.
After he's been weight drained because of the
Daniel Gill.
Because of the 157.
Yeah,
he hasn't weighed as little as that since 2007. That's a long time for a fighter of that age, isn't it?
You know, it's a business, isn't it? But you know, no one's under any illusions that Cotto is a natural middleweight, because he's not, is he? He's if anything, he's probably a natural welterweight.
Yeah.
Alvarez is fighting at roughly the same weight Cotto is now, as in Alvarez has been fighting just over light middle.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I mean, you've got to wonder, will Alvarez ever box at light middle again? Because it doesn't look like he's going to.
No. Okay. I mean, also on that bill was Roman Gonzalez, who has been at the top of the sport, albeit in the smaller weight divisions, for a number of years now, and has been very, very impressive, certainly to the hardcore fan. A few more people got to see him as a result of appearing on Golovkin's card at the weekend, and he was typically impressive. Guys, what's your take on Roman Gonzalez? Were you as impressed as I was?
Yeah.
I thought he was awesome.
I mean, he did himself no harm, did he? He sort of did the best thing he could do in that situation, which was look sensational.
I thought he stole the show.
A lot of people did, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Golovkin got caught for a round or two, whereas Gonzalez was fighting a better caliber opponent and absolutely destroyed him. Yeah. Poor old Sosa just, you know, he got up a couple of times, but just knew there was nothing he could do.
Anyone who can upstage Golovkin has got to be special, and he's a 3-weight world champion. Those guys never get the credit, do they? The tiny guys.
The last guys really were probably Michael Carvajal and Humberto Gonzalez when they engaged in that brilliant series.
These are the first guys to get $1 million, wasn't it, that weight?
Can Gonzalez do anything like that? Can he create that kind of...
Problem is, he doesn't speak English, does he?
No.
And that is a problem to the, well, to the English-speaking fans, I suppose.
But I don't know, but maybe things are changing a bit. Because does Canelo speak much English? Has he ever got around to learning much?
I don't know, I think they're working on it, aren't they? I think that it's a thing that, you know, I remember Felix Trinidad, he didn't speak English, and they all said that if he spoke English, he'd have been an even bigger star than what he was, and even Julio Cesar Chavez.
Yeah.
But he does have...
It's certainly an advantage to speak English.
Yeah, but he does have a potential super fight with Inoue. So if that can make some headlines and make some headway, that could be huge for the smaller weight divisions.
What is it about Gonzalez that's so special?
He seems to be the complete package. No real flaws. Just a sensational little fighter, isn't he?
And people like aggressive fighters who go forwards.
He's fast, he's aggressive, he can knock people out.
It plays into all that sort of people, you know, were sort of fed up with Mayweather being a defensive genius. They like seeing, you
people
know,
like
Canelo's aggressive, Triple G who's aggressive, and Gonzalez goes forward as well.
There's been some interesting fights, hasn't there? And some positive fights, some positive performances, some real entertainment since May 2, Mayweather, Pacquiao, and sport is in good shape, dare I say.
It is.
Nah, we're doomed.
It's always been doomed for years, isn't it? But it's doing well. We've spoke about those guys being the anti-Mayweather, the Golovkins, the Canelos, the Gonzalez's. You know, there is exciting fights out there. They just need to be in the public eye.
No, I agree. Right. This weekend, over in Boston, we've got James DeGale going for the super middleweight title, the vacant IBF super middleweight title, against very, very talented, very tricky Andre Durrell. You can see why. I think, are they dead level in terms of the odds?
I saw that yesterday, it was
kind of dead level.
Obviously, it's a pick and fight, isn't it?
If it was over here, say if the fight was in London, would De Gale be a strong favourite or a stronger favourite?
For sure, yeah. Home or the advantage of being where it is.
Is it going to be difficult for? Not difficult, but is it going to be hard for him to get a decision over in Boston?
The school of thought is that he's got to beat him quite clearly to get the decision, and I don't think it's a fight that he's going to win clearly. I don't know if that makes sense, but you could say if he beats him closely, they might not give it to him.
But is that an old school? Sorry, John. Is that an old school way of thinking though? Because, for example, first thing you Darren Barker when he went and he beat Daniel Gill, and I know Gill was from Australia. But that was a close decision, and it went Barker's way. There was another one recently as
Jamie
well.
Jamie McDonnell again.
It's the Japanese guy, wasn't it? It probably is an outdated.
But I hear you completely.
It's a really hard fight to pick, isn't it? They're both well matched. It could be a stinker. We hope not.
It could be a stinker.
But they're both top quality boxers.
Yeah, both. Deserving of fighting for the title, aren't they?
I think De Gale might knock him out.
Well, Eddie Hearn said that today, hasn't he? You can see footage on our website of everything that's actually going on out there at the moment. We've got up to the minute coverage on the website.
You can make an argument that Durrell, you know, he's superbly fast and brilliantly skilled, perhaps a bit vulnerable, and De Gale in his last couple has been hitting quite hard. Gale can go forward as well, potentially can be quite strong and rough at super middleweight, so I wonder, he might be able to catch him.
I agree about the Gale and the fact that he's looked really good and as he stepped up his level of opposition in his last few fights, he's looked good and he's taken people out. Regarding Durrell, he did stagnate, didn't he, after the Froch fight. And some people did actually think he beat Froch. that was a close fight, and he was ultra competitive in that. He stagnated, but he's been busy. He was busy last year, boxing again, and you know he's certainly talented.
Tagal's operated at a high level, hasn't he? Certainly over the last 12 months or so, at least.
Yeah.
But has Tagal beaten someone as good as, well, Carl Froch that Darrell's been in with, and Abraham?
Arguably that version of Froch was fresher and probably could have been near his peak than the more recent Froch.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he arguably gave him hell. If he can replicate that form, it's going to be a very hard fight for Tagal. But like John said, Tagal's form is excellent at the minute. So,
well, I went to his last public workout in London.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking, so maybe I've just been swayed by that. Because like, obviously I was going in thinking my view on the fight was more that home advantage could be crucial and could be crucial for Darrell. But Tagal, he looked in great shape. Better than ever. Yeah. He seemed so confident.
That's been a
criticism so up for
of
it,
hasn't it? His conditioning, obviously, it's unfounded, but people have said that. And like John said, he's looked sensational in training. His last few fights, he's looked sensational. Well, can he step up on the most important fight of his career? I mean, he's handled pressure. He won the Olympic Games, didn't he? Yeah. So it's not like pressure will get to him.
And his whole team has complete faith in him. Like Jim McDonald has absolute confidence, as does Tagal, which sort of, yes, I think he might
and
do
he'll
it.
Make history.
I think he might do
he'll
it.
He'll make history, won't he?
He will lift the curse.
Yeah.
Of a GB boxer. A GB Olympic gold medalist has yet to win a professional world title.
Not that many went on to fight for professional world titles, did they? But it's looking. A lot of people are picking Tagal for this. I mean, I remember, was it 2010 when Tagal kind of came along into the professional ranks, and for a while there, he looked sensational. He was going. He beat Paul Smith. I remember he beat Paul Smith in Liverpool. He was talking about that he wanted to win a world title before the next Olympics, which obviously would have been 2012. Didn't quite work out for him, and it all went wrong, didn't it, with the George Groves fight? Was he overconfident for that? Is there a danger that he's overconfident here?
No, I think Groves knew him so well. They had history, didn't they? I don't think that was a confidence thing. Well, he's an ultra confident guy, isn't he? Anyway, yeah. Tagal.
Well, Groves got completely in his head.
Yeah.
Like he.
But, I mean, Groves is a really good fighter, isn't he? They're well matched, and if Tagal beats Darrell, then there's a natural fight there.
It's interesting. I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's a bad sign because like. Over the last couple of days, like Willie Darrell, Andre Darrell's brother, has been like heckling Tagal, and Tagal seems a little bit wound up by that, which I think is a bad sign because Willie Darrell was trying to do that to Badu Jack, who was fighting Anthony Darrell, the other brother, for the WBC title, and Badu Jack just seemed. I remember at the weigh-in, like Anthony Darrell's kind of. Fans and cheerleaders and entourage were all like getting up on the stage shouting and barking, but Badu Jack just seemed completely not bothered about it and won the fight, whereas James Tagal seems a little bit rattled by it.
I think with Tagal he seems a bit fiery anyway, but calm during the fight. He does get involved in verbal barbs, doesn't he, like with Groves and that.
That didn't work out too well.
No, again, that was a close fight.
You mentioned Groves there. What would be next for the winner of this fight? Do you think it would be a natural if it was Tagal that he would come? He'd come back and he would fight Groves in a rematch. Do you think that would be the way they'd go? But isn't Groves waiting for
Badu Jack?
I think as we speak, he's got. The Badu Jack fight, because it was meant to be going. I believe it was meant to be going to Perth Biz today, but then they've come to an agreement. So I think he's fighting Badu Jack in America.
Wouldn't that be a nice story? If I remember when when they made Groves Tagal the first fight, their first professional fight, when they made that. And there were quite a few slap on the backs there. There was people saying, brilliant, at least you're not waiting. You're not waiting around for it to get bigger and to get bigger. Wouldn't it be lovely if their first fight was, because it was quite competitive. It wasn't a classic, admittedly, but it was engrossing and it was tight. Could have gone either way. And then they had their rematch on British soil in a unification fight.
That would be that's our next massive super fight. That would be awesome.
Perfect story as well. And I think Jack is beatable for Groves. I would think Groves would win that fight. I mean, could be wrong, but
I think so too.
I think DeGale's got a tougher challenge here, but.
And also their first fight sort of would make that rematch even bigger. Plus they've both been on really interesting sort of paths since. Obviously Groves had that huge rivalry with Karl Froch, and then DeGale sort of, you know, really was sinking out of sight. Even though he was getting fights on Channel 5, they weren't great. They weren't against great opposition, and now he's sort of, you know, worked his way back, really.
Yeah, with some stunning performances. It's a great rivalry.
Prior, Nick, you're probably, out of the three of us, the most familiar with DeGale as an amateur. Did you predict great things for DeGale when he was prior to what happened at the Olympics? Was it obvious?
No, it was obvious he was a very, very good fighter, because he was beating other guys out of sight who were decent themselves. But that's where their rivalry spawned, because they were both obviously from the same amateur club in Dale Youth, which is amazing that club can produce these two guys at the same time. Yeah, no, DeGale was clearly a very good fighter and a very good international fighter, represented his country, won, you know, numerous titles. He's clearly destined for big things.
It seems to me, John, that it's not really getting a lot of attention outside of boxing media, and even in the boxing world it hasn't. Certainly in Britain, interest in James DeGale hasn't caught fire. Why do you think that is? Because he's an Olympic champion, you know, he could be making history, he's fighting for a world title. The nation should be behind him, but you sense that no one really cares, almost.
Yeah, I think if he wins, then that would probably be a different story, that people would latch on to that. But maybe it still dates from the sort of fallout of the Groves fight. In the build up, he was really sort of over the top, and a lot of people didn't like that.
People don't warm to that throwing, do they?
And I think if you act like that, you've really got to win.
Yeah.
So then once he lost that fight, I think that really hurt his standing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure he's ever really, like, because he's in actual fact.
This could be the fight that captures people's imagination. The thing that he's added to his armoury is that he's stopping people, and if he makes a statement and stops Darrell, then he can be a big star.
His style has sort of changed from the amateurs, hasn't it?
Yeah, he threw his very fast hand in southpaw, isn't he? Some of his fights have been quite difficult to watch. They've been a bit scrappy. I don't know if you remember the Olympic final against the Cuban, and the Cuban bit him rolling around on the floor, and it was a foul-filled fight.
I really liked watching him in that Olympics, so I've sort of liked watching him ever since then, but I guess I'm in a minority.
DeGale beat the man who beat the man. DeGale beat Artaev, who beat Korobov, who should have won gold in that Olympics. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
I like it, that's what we need. We need facts and things like that. with DeGale, I was thinking this the other day, and the whole rivalry with George Groves, because he did lose it a bit. And I remember at the first press conference when it was announced, he was kind of holding his nose and and then saying that George Groves' his breath smell and things like that. But ultimately, it's not. That's the history, isn't it? And we've all had disagreements with kind of our enemies in our teenage years, and that just kind of seemed to spill over. John, you touched on it earlier. It's not really a reflection on James Agel being a bad guy, and he has got this. And I think if you speak to kind of a lot of people in the street, their perception of James Agel is that he's arrogant and everything else. Whereas when you sit down with him, you have a chat with him, you speak to him, he's far from it, isn't he?
Yeah, I think all the sort of interviews we've done with him for Boxing News have been sort of great, and he does come across really well there when he's sort of just being normal. But maybe it's because when there's a TV camera on him, he gets too overexcited or something. But yeah, in the past, he hasn't come across well. But again, that might change with this fight. You know, you can see it on Boxing News Online. Sort of Andre Durrell at the press conference saying, you know, or not that he didn't care, almost that he didn't care about the world title, and that this fight was, you know, was so good that, you know, he didn't need a world title. Whereas De Gea was saying that he wanted to win it for himself, but he also wanted to win it for his country and that kind of stuff. So I think people like seeing a Brit go over to the States and hopefully beat the American. It worked for Kell Brook. Kell Brook's really popular now, so he'll put himself on the map beating Sean Porter.
This would, you know, continue a great trend for British boxing with Jamie McDonnell, Kell Brook. If De Gea adds to this, to go out there and win a title on the American soil will be a sensational result, without a doubt.
Do you think he's going to do it, John?
Yeah.
I think he'll do it as well.
Knock him out in the 11th round.
I don't think he'll stop him. I think he'll win on points.
You think he'll win?
And I think he'll win clearly enough on points that there won't be any controversy.
Bully him in the second half of the fight.
I think now he's added a bit of power and a bit of spite to his punches, that can be the difference. But by no means right off Durrell, because he can fight.
Okay. It would all of a sudden throw James De Gea into that mix with the likes of, with potential fights with the likes of Andre Ward, Gennady, Golovkin, and those guys, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and he said he wants to fight the best. He said he wants to fight Andre Ward.
He's desperate to fight Frotch as well, isn't he? But
but he sort of accepted that that's not going to happen. That would be the big name, big money fight.
I think he's seen the stage that Frotch brings and that he saw Groves be a part of, and I'm sure, like any professional boxer, you'd want to be a part of that. But
okay. So we're fairly positive about James Agel's chances.
What do you reckon?
I think that James De Gea is going to win the fight. I'm a little bit put off with this whole camera waving action
Periscope
that's going on in here.
We're live on Periscope.
We're live to the nation.
Yeah, we are, but it's like, you know, I feel like I'm talking to myself when I'm asking these questions.
You're not,
mate.
We're
listening and goofing into the camera.
You're both absolutely engrossed in that camera.
No, we're not.
But there's another fight going on. Actually, it's tonight, as we're recording this on the Friday afternoon. Friday evening, Alexander Povetkin against Mike Perez. Which I believe is an eliminator for the WBC heavyweight title, currently owned by Deontay Wilder, of course. Perez disappointed last time out when he lost to Brian Jennings. I don't know if that was his last outing, but that was his last
significant
outing. Yeah, and he really didn't look good then. Povetkin favourite, you think, against Mike Perez?
Yeah, I think it's a very good fight, actually. I think Povetkin is rightly a favourite. I think it's a really good fight. I think Povetkin, especially in Moscow, Povetkin is potentially the second best heavyweight in the world, including Wilder.
But after the way Klitschko beat him, though?
Yeah, well, I think Klitschko beats everyone like that.
But he didn't beat Jennings like that.
No, I do think, though, that if Povetkin beats Perez, which is likely, I think he presents a tough challenge for Wilder.
Really, really, I agree with you.
I don't see that as an easy fight to call.
It lacks...
Especially as Wilder's fighting this Eric Molina. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
And Wilder doesn't look you know, really powerful and athletic, but doesn't look technically that great, does he?
What, Deontay Wilder?
Deontay Wilder.
No.
You know, he's still footwork, he's still quite raw.
Talk about amateur careers, he was almost unbeatable as an amateur as well. He can fight. Klitschko showed, though, that Klitschko's the man. It's just about who is number two.
Povetkin, 35 years old now. He didn't have a good time of it with Vladimir Klitschko. There's been talk for quite a while that he's been on the slide, even before he lost to Klitschko. Is there a danger that he could go old overnight, that Mike Perez could spring the upset tonight?
Well, I don't think 35's old for a heavyweight. Klitschko's what, 38 now, isn't he?
No, I know, but I'm trying to think who he was fighting. I think it was when he was out. I can't remember, but Povetkin, there was a definite point in his career where he kind of almost looked like he'd peaked.
Yeah.
And he's steadily been tumbling from that peak since.
Perez isn't the most lively, is he?
No, this fight will tell us a lot. I mean, Perez is good. I do think he's a solid heavyweight. It'll tell us a lot about Povetkin and whether he can potentially beat Wilder.
We did talk briefly about Eric Molina as a challenger for Deontay Wilder. We discuss it in Heroes and Villains in this week's magazine, which you can get from newsagents or you can download it for the digital issue. It's a really bad fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost back to what he was doing before he won the world title. He was really fighting, you know, subpar opposition.
There's no justification for it.
Could be worse.
Yeah, but it's a bit of a glimpse into the depth of the heavyweight division, isn't it?
Because if he's not fighting someone like Povetkin or Perez or Brian Jennings, who else is there? Yeah, Chris Areola.
There's not many decent available opposition, is there? But this guy is poor. You know, is what it is, isn't it?
It's not the first time a heavyweight champion has picked out of an obscure challenger.
Klitschko does it, as in.
Well, there's been a few
between fighting the sort of top contenders. He's cleaned out the top contenders, but he's had quite a few gimmies sprinkled in.
Yeah, are
Alex Leopold, exactly.
Do we forgive Deontay Wilder for taking this fight because, you know, he performed well in January against Bermain Stiven? Once a fighter has won the world title, are they allowed? Are they allowed to kind of have one or two fights where they kind of do as they please?
It's important that it doesn't become a theme that he then has two or three fights against subpar opposition.
Well, I would rather see him fighting than sort of just, you know, waiting until the end of the year or something. So I'm quite glad he's getting an outing, and the fact that it's in Alabama, it'll be a big event. I'm glad that he's fighting.
We're pleased he's active. We can forgive this guy for now, but let's not make a habit of it.
Yeah, hope you're listening, Deontay. Let that be a lesson to you. If he wins, well, he's more than likely going to win, Deontay Wilder. But if he wins and he looks absolutely spectacular, that could attract some more casuals, couldn't it?
Yeah, and I think people like seeing these big guys throwing big punches. The people like seeing heavyweight knockouts. So another highlight reel finish, you know, it just helps if there's a decent undercard. I'm not sure people are going to be desperate to tune in just to see
Deontay Wilder beat the hell out of someone.
Yeah,
I hear you. Okay, I think, is there anything else we need to talk about?
You alluded to the teenage rivals we've all had, and I'd just like to hear a bit more about your teenage rivals.
No.
No.
Teenage love rivals.
Things were different then, Matt.
They were. Is there anything else we need to cover? Well, obviously next week we'll talk in depth about Amir Khan's fight next week, next Friday night, Chris Algieri. Let me just ask you, Nick, actually. What was your reaction? I think John and I have already spoken about this. Without going into details about who's going to win and how, what was your reaction when Chris Algieri was announced as the opponent for Amir Khan?
It was a bit of a meh, wasn't it? It's a bit of a, It's not exciting. He's not a terrible fighter, Algeri. He's tough. He showed that against Provodnikov. He got up off the floor against Manny Pacquiao.
a lot of times.
Yeah. You know, so he's got stamina and he's got staying power. I expect it to go the distance. Again, for Khan, it's sort of what's available at this time. It's an okay opponent.
Step down from Devin Alexander?
Yeah. Not a huge step down. I mean, Algeria's no mug, is he, to beat Provodnikov. It's an okay fight.
It's an okay fight. Then the following day, on May 30, there's three world title fights taking place at the O2 in London. And also there's some interest with Anthony Joshua taking on Kevin Johnson in what some would deem his first real test of his professional career that so far lasted 12 fights and not many more rounds. We think that it's that the show headliner Kell Brook against Frankie Gavin is the first all British world welterweight title fight.
We do.
Does that add anything to it? We have discussed this in the week. We're aware, shall we say, that there has been some negative feedback to this being a pay-per-view show, which given what people pay already for their subscriptions and what have you, you can understand. However, as I have said, I think more than once on this platform and in the magazine as well, I can see why this, and I think that it justifies value for money in this day and age. But going back to the original point, does the fact that this is the first all-British world welterweight title fight, the fact that it's in London, it's against two guys that are probably about at their peak. And if it wasn't for the Leonard Bundu fight, I know it might sound ridiculous, but Frankie Gavin will be coming into this unbeaten. It's not that long ago this was regarded as quite a nice matchup. People wanted to see this fight.
I think it's a fight people do still want to see. Not many people will pick Gavin, rightly so, because Brook has performed so well of late. But Gavin is a really good boxer. On his day, he can be really, really, really good. He was a world amateur champion. He's underachieved as a professional. I think he lacks a serious punch, although Denton Vassell would probably disagree. I'm interested by the fight. I'll certainly watch it. You know, these all British domestic rivalries, they can throw up some interesting outcomes. Do you know what I mean? It's not beyond the realms of possibility for Gavin to outpoint him and outfiddle him. You know, tricky southpaw. Brook might just have an off night.
He's a lot bigger though, Kell Brook.
He is, and he's powerful. Yeah.
I think Brooks are rightly
the favourite, yeah. But I'm not. I just think Gavin is a good boxer.
It's good that, you know, Brook only fought in March, at the end of March, so he's quite. Yeah, it's good to see a world champion. It's clearly he's going to be fighting regularly, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Could we see? We've kind of. I remember when Frankie just missed out on the Olympics because of not being able to make weight and what have you, and then. Despite the fact that he came out of those Olympics without even taking part in them, there was still a wave of optimism behind him. And for a number of years, you were kind of waiting for that optimism to become reality and for him to deliver. It never quite happened. And you still get a feeling that perhaps against Denton Vassell, we saw it, there was a spite there. He really looked like he was up for that one. Have we still not seen the best of Frankie Gavin? And is there a possibility we could witness against Kell Brook a fighter that we thought many years ago was going to appear?
I think there's a chance we'll never see the best of Frankie Gavin. As an amateur, he was very good and he was suited to that. He was suited to that format. I mean, remember he boxed Mario Kindelan as an amateur, and as a result of that, being in the ring with Kindelan, he went on leaps and bounds in his performances from that. Yeah, could this be the fight we see the best of Gavin? Probably not.
Because he was boxing in March as well, and again, it was just sort of 8 rounds together fight, but he didn't look great.
You just hope that he will box to his best and he'll raise his game. Well, he'll have to raise his game to be competitive with Brook, for sure.
I mean, he probably will, but it might be hard to do it over 12 rounds. You sort of need...
I think I'm more of a Gavin fan than perhaps the rest of you are. Do you know what I mean? I might be giving him too much credit here, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he puts in a really good performance and makes it a close fight.
Well, he's extremely talented, but it's just the sort of the size, strength, and conditioning side.
Yeah, he's just underachieved, isn't he? And he doesn't always perform.
It's not over yet. He's not old.
No.
Like it. We'll be back next week and we will talk in more depth about Brook Gavin. We will also focus on the rest of the bill, which features Kevin Mitchell challenging Jorge Linares for the WBC lightweight title as an IBF featherweight title fight for Lee Selby against, how do you pronounce his first name?
Evgeny Gradovich, the Russian
Both
Pacquiao.
Names. The Russian Pacquiao.
Well, I made that up.
Right, okay. Yeah, so we'll talk more about that. And of course, there's Anthony Joshua. And there's some really, really tidy domestic title fights on the bill as well. But we'll speak more about that next week. As I say, we'll also have a little look at what Amir Khan's doing. And thanks, as always, everybody, for listening. Thanks for your continued support and for downloading. It is sincerely appreciated. And thanks, Nick and John, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.